Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It's a listener-supported broadcast. Please go to the homepage, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, and make a donation or start up an automatic payment in the accounts today to ensure that this kind of broadcast continues. We produce it without your help in the first place, but in order to continue simply paying rent and whatnot, we kind of do need your help, so please do so. My very special guest today, offering us an exclusive viewpoint on New Zealand politics, is none other than Paul Carruthers. Welcome to the show, mate.
G'day, Vinny. How are you doing?
I mean, it's somewhat fabulous. It's my standard response, but you know that. Okay, so Alan Hubbard is basically your speciality in terms of New Zealand corruption, probably the biggest corrupt case in New Zealand history for a long, long time, and also the media cover-ups of it and whatnot. Now, there's been recent developments on this story. Can you fill us in, please?
Yeah, yesterday it was in the news from a few different sources that a company called Scales Corporation, which used to belong to Alan Hubbard, was listed on the stock exchange, and basically the guy who bought it in the receivership just held on to it for about 18 months and then listed it on the stock exchange and effectively sold all the shares in it. And made an absolute fortune out of it too. Now, there's a lot of background to this, which I think would, for your listeners, that they should have a good look at. The first thing is that the Scales Corporation was originally a shipping company, and Alan Hubbard, over a period of decades, turned it into basically New Zealand's largest apple exporter, right, or fruit exporter. And initially, it started, way back at the turn of the century. Scales Corporation was actually, it was a company that a bunch of wool growers and wool exporters developed it was a mechanism by which they could export their wool to England and Europe. And then it became a shipping company, and then Alan Hubbard, over a period of time, turned it into basically New Zealand's largest apple exporter. And so it was a very, very successful company. And how this came about is that we have done Official Information Act requests which prove beyond any doubt that the government put pressure on Alan Hubbard. When they renewed the Crown Guarantee for South Canterbury Finance, they put pressure on Alan Hubbard to tip some of his own companies into South Canterbury Finance to provide, you know, as an act of good faith, to provide some security for the Crown and for the taxpayer against their liability. Now, what people need to understand about this whole situation before I go any further is this, okay? the Crown was involved with South Canterbury Finance from the day after John Key and Bill English, from the day after the National Party took office in 2008. They were advised by the Reserve Bank not to renew the Crown guarantee on South Canterbury Finance. Right? This is something really important the public of this country need to understand. The government is presenting, John Key and Bill English are presenting this whole issue as if it was a fait accompli, or in other words, unavoidable. That is an absolute lie, and it's a complete and utter load of crap. The documented, absolutely irrefutable documented evidence proves beyond any doubt that they were advised by the Reserve Bank not to renew the Crown guarantee on South Canterbury Finance. And the governor of the Reserve Bank at the time, Bollard, actually, I've read the email myself, and it says, and it was to Treasury, which was indirectly to Bill English, right? The email said, Alan Hubbard's a good man. He's been at it for 63 years. If he can't make South Canterbury Finance work, nobody can. Don't renew the Crown guarantee. It's not too big to fail. If it does, if he can't save it and it does tip over, it is not too big to, it won't do as much harm to the New Zealand economy as you think. So my advice would not be to renew. Well, Bill English now that was the day after Bill English took office in 2008. Bill English completely ignored that advice. Now, what I want to know is who influenced Bill English to renew the Crown guarantee against the governor of the Reserve Bank's advice first, okay? When they renewed the Crown guarantee against the Reserve Bank governor's advice, they then got Treasury to put pressure on Alan Hubbard to tip some of his own companies into South Canterbury Finance as an act of good faith, which he did without question. Okay, now here's an important point for the New Zealand public. Listen to this carefully. By doing that, Alan Hubbard became the only finance company director in the world. Listen to me. The only finance company director in the world who put his own assets in to back the government guarantee on his company. Right? That is a really, really important distinction for the public to understand. So he did that without question. He gave the government, Scales Corporation, well, he didn't give the government, he gave South Canterbury Finance, Scales Corporation, very successful company, Helicopters New Zealand, the most successful helicopter leasing company in Australasia, certainly probably one of the most successful in the world, right? Alan Hubbard built up Helicopters New Zealand over a period of decades. And I think there's one or two other companies that he tipped in as well. Okay? Now, once they'd actually got those companies, the day after Alan Hubbard, after that deal was signed, and I can even show you the emails from Treasury, which indicated a lot of anxiety around this. You can actually see, when you do an Official Information Act request, you can see the emails clearly are going, oh, we hope he tips them in. Oh, we hope he does it. Oh, it's really important. He's got it. You know, we need this signed off. We've got to get him to sign it. We can't do anything until he's actually signed and agreed to this. And the day after he signed his companies over, the anonymous complaint appeared out of the blue to the Securities Commission, accusing him effectively of fraud. Okay? And that's what sparked the investigation into him. Now, New Zealand, listen. This happened 2 years. This was in 2010 by this stage. This happened 2 years after the Crown first got involved with South Canterbury Finance. As soon as Bill English renewed the Crown guarantee, they put their own directors in on the board, and they put their own Treasury staff in there, fossicking around, having a look around. So when you might think that all of this thing about Alan Hubbard, all the fraud accusations and all the rest of it, suddenly sprang up out of nowhere. They didn't. This was meticulously planned for 2 years before they actually made the move and went public and said, this guy's guilty of fraud. Now,
can I interject something here? Penny Bright and myself went to the Auckland City Library to look back of a backlog of New Zealand Herald articles. This was back during that big campaign against Winston Peters. You know, Winston Peters is corrupt, Winston Peters doesn't answer questions or whatever. And it was day after day, day in, day out, positive mentions of John Key, negative mentions of Helen Clark, and accusations of corruption against Winston Peters. However, after 6 months of investigation, they found what? Nothing. Not a freaking thing. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because it's an example of how the media in this country works in coalition with corrupt officials. Sorry, go ahead.
I can tell you from personal experience, the mainstream media is absolutely corrupt in this country, and they are complicit. And I'll tell you what, having known Alan personally and spoken to him for hours and hours and hours, we spoke on an average of probably about 2 hours at least every 10 to 14 days for the 15 months between when he was first accused and when he was killed, right? I know his side of the story intimately well, okay? And I can tell you now, the media are absolutely complicit in spinning the story the way John Key and Bill English wanted it to be told. That guy has been completely denied anything remotely resembling a fair trial. Didn't even get close to a courtroom. He was killed 2 days before he was due in court in the case he took against the Crown to challenge what they were doing to him. Okay? And it was said to me all the way through it, John Key will never put Alan Hubbard in a courtroom because it will be political suicide. Well, didn't that prove to be true? Okay? So the bottom line is, the day after Alan Hubbard tipped his companies in and agreed to do that without question as an act of good faith, this anonymous complaint appeared. Now, what people need to understand, as I've just said to you, is that the government already had 2 years of involvement with South Canterbury Finance in there fossicking around to see what was going on before they accused him of fraud and before they moved and made such a big public song and dance. So any question I'll ask you is this, New Zealanders, what is the fastest way to destroy the value of a company? What is the fastest possible way to drive down the value of its assets? The answer to that question is to publicly announce that it is in distress. To publicly announce something like, the owner of this company, we think he's guilty of fraud, or we think the company's in trouble. There is no faster way to destroy the value of the assets. So why, after 2 years, and after getting Alan Hubbard to tip his most valuable assets into that company, the day after he did that, they moved on him? And they made such a public spectacle people need to think about the process they used here. Think about this. They accused him of fraud before they even started their investigation. How does that work? And people didn't even question it. And I'll tell you the reason why people didn't question it. And New Zealanders need to do some hardcore self-examination over this. Because my opinion is that because this man was a finance company director, the majority of people immediately defaulted to a position of, oh, well, yeah, but he is a finance company director and shit, we really need to get them. We really need to nail those buggers. So let's not think about the fact that the process they're using is completely back to front or completely unfair. He's a finance company director. We don't need to know anything else. And that is exactly how John Key has got away with completely taking the whole lot of you to the cleaners. He has effectively taken $1 billion of your taxpayer money and divvied it up amongst his mates and said, here you go, guys, have a free-for-all with this. And you people are all asleep. You think somehow, oh, yeah, but wasn't Alan Hubbard, you know, now, wasn't he a bit doddery? Wasn't he a bit this? Well, that's what the media told you. That's what the government wanted you to think.
The reality is, Alan Hubbard's an incredibly intelligent man, incredibly moral, incredibly ethical, and he has the capacity to run nearly any company into the sky and not the ground. I mean,
Simon Power resigned from his portfolio as Justice Minister, and if you want my honest opinion, that man resigned because when he understood the scale of what he had effectively initiated, because it was him that they got to do it, he went to the Governor-General and got an order in council from the Governor-General to put Alan Hubbard into statutory management. Now, listen to this carefully, New Zealanders. He did this without going anywhere near a courtroom. Alan Hubbard had his assets seized, frozen and seized and sold out from under him without one single court order, one single warrant in place. What I need to know is this. Why did they go to the Governor-General to get a piece of paper to approve doing this to Alan Hubbard, and why did they completely bypass the court system? And I'll tell you this. This is John Key's weakest link. He's actually weaker on this than he is with Kim.com. If anybody chooses to go and do an investigation in this, it will start unravelling very quickly. John Key's side of the story will start unravelling very, very quickly. And I have just done my head in, mate, trying to get Kiwis to wake up and understand this one simple point. If you want to know how to take John Key down, if you want to know how to finish that man off, if you want to know what his Achilles heel is, it is the process he used against Alan Hubbard. And it's really simple. Simon Power got authority from the Governor-General to seize Alan Hubbard's assets without going anywhere near a courtroom, and the law he used to do it was the Corporate Investigations and Management Act 1989. Now, by its nature and by its name, the Corporate Investigations and Management Act, right, can only be applied to corporations, and that is why Simon Power went outside the court system to get approval from the governor. So effectively, John Key set the Governor-General up. The Governor-General is actually just as exposed on this issue as Simon Power and everybody else.
Would I be able to make a point here, Paul, because what this reminds me of, I was watching a film the other night called Welcome to the Punch about police corruption in London.
Hang on, before you go any further, I've got to finish this point, mate, because it is really, really important. It's about the Corporate Investigations and Management Act. So not only is it supposed to apply to corporations and not people, so think this through, people. They applied it to Alan Hubbard personally and seized all his assets. Alan Hubbard is not a corporation. He was a person. They seized all of his private assets. So not only that, but when you read the Corporate Investigations and Management Act, it clearly states the purpose of this act is to protect the investors and to preserve the interests of the company. Now think this through. How does accusing the owner of the company publicly of fraud before you even start an investigation, thereby completely destroying the value of the company in the public eye, driving down the value of its assets, and ending up absolutely unavoidably creating the situation where they have to fire sale off the assets at 25 cents in the dollar or less, how does that preserve the company and how does that protect the interests of the investors? It doesn't. So not only was the law that they applied wrong, it was applied unlawfully, but not only that, the intent of the law completely missed the mark by a country mile. Do you understand that?
Well, what I'm saying is that this is not like an accident. Oh, he just wasn't following any proper procedure. They're criminals, all right? And they're criminal scum engaging in a conspiracy. It can't be any more simple. And the point I was going to make before is about this film, Welcome to the Punch, about London police corruption. There was a top police officer who was running guns and things like that, and one of his lower downs actually caught him out on it, and he asked him, what are you going to get for that, okay? Are they going to make you the next police commissioner for covering this up, that kind of thing? And guess what happened with Simon Power after he did all of this illegal chicanery? Well, he became the head of Westpac Corporate Banking, straight out of Parliament, mate, and guess who was the prime beneficiary in the receivership of South Canterbury Finance?
The government's bank is the Westpac Bank, right? The Westpac Bank was one of the single biggest beneficiaries of the taxpayer-funded bailout. In other words, the difference between what they sold the assets for, the amount of money they sold the assets for, and what was owed on them to the banks, right, was the shortfall, in other words, had to be stumped up by the taxpayer, right? And Simon Power initiated all of this by getting this order in council from the Governor-General, bypassing the courts to put Alan Hubbard in this situation. Now, what you've got to understand, New Zealanders, is John Key needs Alan Hubbard to look like he was guilty. John Key needs Alan Hubbard to be the fall guy for this, because he's got to justify to you why he's just ripped up $1 billion of your money, paying out the shortfall to the banks on the sale of the assets to his mates. And who bought the assets? That's what this is about. That's what today is about. Yesterday they announced that Scales Corporation, right, was sold on the stock exchange, and they raised $149 million. Well, let's give you a bit of background into that. I've already told you that the government put pressure on Alan Hubbard to tip that into South Canterbury Finance, Scales Corporation, and so he did that. Then they called him a fraud, and South Canterbury Finance collapsed as a result. Okay? And where they had everybody in the country thinking Alan Hubbard was, oh, maybe this guy is a fraud, maybe this is all inevitable, according to John Key, you know, he's completely bogus. John Key, I'll tell you how corrupt this whole investigation, this whole situation is. There is a video recording on TVNZ's archives of John Key walking out onto the steps of Parliament the day that the receivership was announced, and this is the exact phrase he used. He stood in the steps of Parliament on TVNZ One News and said this exact phrase: "Alan Hubbard is completely Alan Hubbard completely bankrupted that company." That is the exact phrase he used. Now, here's the thing, New Zealand: John Key said that 9 months before Alan Hubbard was even charged with fraud. Now, if you don't understand the implications of that, then I won't insult anybody, but you'd have to be pretty silly if you didn't understand what that actually meant in real terms. What that meant was the Prime Minister went out on national television and directly influenced public opinion on a matter that was still under investigation. Why did he do that? That was go and do your research. That was 9 months before Alan Hubbard was even charged with fraud. Now, John Key has never been held to account for that. And Alan Hubbard never quite made it into the courtroom, did he? He was killed before he actually got to court to prove himself innocent. And within less than a week after he was killed, the government had all of his medical records sealed, and including his autopsy report, as well as all of the evidence that Alan Hubbard and his lawyers had amassed against the government, against the Crown, was sealed at the Crown's request by the courts, meaning basically no one's allowed to know what it contained. So the government had any evidence against itself shut down as soon as Alan Hubbard was killed. Why did they do that? You know,
the answer's obvious.
Going back to Scales Corporation, right? There it was yesterday, sold for $149 million. Well, listen up, New Zealand, because I know a lot of people out there don't appear to have very long attention spans, but please, for goodness sake, listen to this, right? Scales Corporation was sold by the receivers to a guy called Ross George, that owns a company called Direct Capital Limited. Now, Ross George, Direct Capital Limited, bought 79.71% of Scales Corporation, right, from the receivers of South Canterbury Finance for, $44 million he paid for it, $44 million. The remaining 20-something percent of Scales Corporation was taken up by the ACC and the New Zealand Superannuation Fund. So first things first, you have a situation here where a man's assets were seized and sold by the Crown, and 20% of one of those assets was effectively gifted to two Crown entities, ACC and New Zealand Superannuation, without a court order, without a warrant, and without a trial. Now, even a drug dealer gets more protection by the courts than that, for a start. Okay? So this guy, Direct Capital, Ross George, bought the 80% of this 80% of this company in round figures for $44 million. That particular year that he bought it, Scales Corporation made a profit, I think, of $74 million. So this is a company that was worth easily $70-plus million on the year that he bought it, and he paid $44 million. How does that work? Right? He then keeps it for, what, 18 months or so? And he lists it on the stock exchange and sells it yesterday for $149 million. Well, who is Direct Capital? Direct Capital is majority owned by Mr. Ross George. What is Mr. Ross George's address? Mr. Ross George lives at 105 St. Stephen's Avenue, Parnell. Who lives at 104 St. Stephen's Avenue, Parnell? John Key. So this is his direct neighbour, lives right across the road, bought one of Alan Hubbard's companies out of the receivership for $44 million, way under its market value, and then he keeps it for a while and he lists it on the stock exchange and walks away with $149 million. And Alan Hubbard is in the process, according to Fairfax Media, their court reporting of the case in Timaru, against the other directors. Right, and that raises a whole another point. How many of you remember the sort of like the if you cast your mind back, they sort of spent 15 months sticking it to Alan Hubbard in the newspapers left, right, and centre. It started out with them calling him the Ponzi scheme and all this sort of stuff, and you know, before they even started their investigation, they were already calling it a Ponzi scheme. That should have made alarm bells go off for absolutely everybody, but. Somehow they got away with it because people were just asleep.
Unfortunately, right? Paul, we've run out of time here today. We have about 20 or 30 seconds left to make rounding points, if you wish.
Go and do your research, people. Do not take this lying down. Stop being passive about it. For God's sake, wake up. John Key's just given $1 billion of your money away to his mates, and none of you really care about it because you're so busy hating finance company directors that you're not really interested in the facts. My advice to you is start taking interest in the facts. Wake up. You're being screwed.
That's right. Thank you very much, Paul Carruthers. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us? Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah. For all of us. Pale, 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 politician. Make a right decision for all of us, yeah, yeah. For all of us. You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk? And will you bring us comfort? Will you bring us comfort?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a very special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Right here we have Russell Malcolm, and this is a media commentary on the Paul Henry show, where he mentioned Graham McCready and also the Pinchgate affair. And this is Russell Malcolm, the very person who actually kind of was the victim of the Pinchgate affair, who knows a little bit about it and indeed was there during the day. So, Russell, welcome to the program, and give us your background rap on this.
Thanks, Vinnie. You've previously filmed the Pinchgate in depth, but a very quick background on it is that I had stood up to corruption at the Rodney Council years ago, and when it was amalgamated with the Auckland Council, there was retaliation coming from prior staff members. After 2.5 years, I said I'm going public about it. I'll be going to the media, all MPs. When I proceeded to, I was arrested and had gag orders put on me. That was only the beginning of what had gone on. Since then, I've had a number of police raids. My business was closed down. The homes were seized. New Zealand law simply does not apply. There's a number of documents that state that the matter has either come from being monitored closely at the highest level. One of those documents says the highest level of government, and the police prosecutor confirmed to the North Shore District Court that the matter is being monitored closely at the highest level of government. Now, that's the charges that were brought on then was in relation to having posted information on the internet, which I maintain was always a human right to express an opinion and also to expose and speak out about corruption, which needs to be spoken out about. We haven't got anywhere with mainstream media besides we've got the evidence there, but it's simply been ignored. And when you come up with anything that's going to really do some damage to government, they won't touch it.
So you're talking about grand-scale corruption in order to cover up that corruption at a critical time just leading into an election, a gag order, and all sorts of restrictions were placed on you, the person who was exposing it, at a very politically sensitive time. Now, that's actually the exact
wording of the sergeant who was sent out to arrest me, that the matter had come from John Key. It should go away after a few weeks. Like, we were right in the election campaign in November 2011. And he thought the matter would go away once the election campaign was over, which is very blatantly saying it's a political gag order, and that's what the bail order conditions were a gag order, and they've both been found to be a breach of human rights and having put them on. There's no justification for ever having them there.
Yeah. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you were going to be exposing somebody at a really bad dime for them or something like that, and they're being corrupt and what have you, and you expose them, they'll shut you down, they'll shut your business down, they'll cut off your communications and things like that with the outside world until it's no longer a problem, and then they'll just get the media to basically ignore you the bulk of the time. And if it gets to the point where they can't ignore you, then they start to demonize the living hell out of you and misrepresent you and call you all sorts of names and things like that. Everybody, before you even open your mouth or get to express any of the evidence, thinks you're crazy.
That's exactly what they've done.
Moving forward to Paul Henry and the Graham McCready piece.
Good evening to you and welcome to the show. We have an unbelievable show for you tonight. See what's behind me? Tonight, Graham McCready is known across New Zealand as the serial litigant who took John Banks to court and won. He had said he was giving up taking private prosecutions, but now he wants to take the Prime Minister to court. He'll join me live.
The police decision not to prosecute John Banks for filing a false electoral return will be investigated by the Independent Police Conduct Authority. At the time, police cited a lack of evidence for the decision. Assistant Commissioner Malcolm Burgess says staff involved in the initial investigation acted professionally and impartially. The investigation is in addition to a private prosecution of police and the Prime Minister by Graham McCready. And that's the news. Back to you, Paul.
And, of course, Graham McCready, Janneke, will be with me shortly. Look at this. I mean, he beavers away in his little den on his old compact computer. These are some briefing notes that he gave me. Good Lord. Still to come on the program this evening, we talk to the man who took John Banks to court and won. And now Graham McCready is going after our Prime Minister. When you hear the name Graham McCready in the media, it's usually followed by the term serial litigant. He's the retired accountant who took John Banks to court and effectively ended John's political career over the handling of donations. Well, now Mr. McCready has the Prime Minister firmly in his sights, and he joins me now. Graham, good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you very much for coming in.
The serial litigant bit, by the way.
It annoys you, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I've been an advocate for people for 50 years, that's why.
Isn't that just a nicer way of saying serial litigant, meaning serial litigant?
No.
Okay.
What you're saying is that I go out and try and just sue people for the fun of it, whereas, in fact, the advocate's working for other people all the time.
Okay, well, that's not really what I'm saying. No. But, I mean, I look at this here, your latest documents. Yes. So five charges here against three people. Yeah. Wouldn't that fit the serial litigant?
No. That's a professional legal advocate who's filing documents in court, in the criminal court, under the criminal procedure. That is what is required.
Okay, we'll talk about why you're doing it in a moment. I thought that as New Zealand's private prosecutor, which is what you've called yourself, self-appointed. I thought that your days were over. I thought you said that, you know, it was time now to move away and enjoy retirement.
But I also said, when I cleaned up what's on my table.
How much is on your table? Quite a lot, by the look of it.
Well, for starters, there was a major fraud case in Auckland, which is ongoing. There's a family law case in Wellington where the woman in the case perjured herself.
Okay.
Okay, and so on.
So there's a lot on your table.
There is a deadline, because on the 23rd of November, Paul, I get an airplane and fly off to Canada and go off with my beloved.
And so that's it. You're with your beloved and all of this is left behind you.
Well, for 2 months anyway.
All right. You filed, as I say, 5 more charges here. Yeah. 2 of them are against the Prime Minister. Yeah. What evidence do you have against the Prime Minister?
Well, it's all in there. And the thing is that we filed...
I'm sure it is, but specifically what evidence do you have against the Prime Minister?
We also filed a third one today, okay, which is in the tab 7.
So now you have 6.
Six
on the go.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have specific evidence against him?
Yes.
You know, the thing is, I mean, I've spoken to people about this, people in the profession, who say you have very little chance of success with this. Well, you must know that you have very little chance of success.
I feel the reverse. Because one of the charges that I've hit the Prime Minister with is an accessory to the original election fraud charge. As an accessory, there's very little left to prove because John Banks has, in fact, been found guilty. Mm. Now
we have to prove that he was an accessory to it.
But no. But all you have to prove is that he helped him in some way.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And that's no mean feat. Let's talk about the cost here. Who's going to pay for this? Because you'll be aware that the Solicitor General won't be taking this on. So who will pay for it?
Well, who told you that?
The Solicitor General isn't taking on any more cases.
Is that right?
Mm.
Oh, that's interesting. Because...
So this could cost you a fortune.
No, it won't.
Why not?
That, to date, has cost $170.
But if you take it as far as you want to take it, and presumably you have to do that if you're going to be successful, yes, it will cost you a fortune. Where will you get the money from?
Why would it cost me a fortune?
Well, it'll cost us a fortune in court time, and you're going to presumably have to fight this yourself if no one else takes it on for you.
Yes. But the courts are there for that reason. And the courts have said, welcome, Mr. McCready. These private prosecutions are an important check on the abuse of power by the executive branch of government who will not prosecute people.
Are you happy that this costs me money through tax and other people watching the program through tax for something that may be entirely futile?
Well, a lot of proceedings brought by the police and everybody else are entirely futile. They don't succeed. But if there is a prima facie case, and we don't get very far unless that stacks up,
yeah,
and the judge issues a summons, okay? So right now, the only person that's involved in that is one judge.
All right, Grant, just very quickly, I wonder what motivates you, because this has affected your health, hasn't it?
Yes.
How heavy a toll has it taken on your health to date?
Well, I had a series of strokes last year, mini stroke. I had
as a result of this, do you think?
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. I'm now identifying what the biggest risk is, and it's sitting in a computer doing that. So you're highest up. I mean, I didn't do much of that, actually. A lot of that was written by other people.
Okay. All right, Grant,
and
all
I did was to put it together.
Okay. We will follow it with much interest. Yes. But I would suggest to you that perhaps your 2-month holiday with your loved one is the thing to focus on. Anyway, we will talk again, Graham McCready there.
I'll try and make it 3.
You try and make it 3 months. Stretch it out. I'm sure the Prime Minister would love you to make it more. Still to come on the program this evening.
What's your analysis of Paul Henry's handling of the evidence?
Well, I was present with Graham McCready on the Monday, the 16th of June this year, 2014. He was in my home, came here for dinner, and we were working on paperwork. And I was present throughout a number of media interviews he'd done that night via his phone and via my home line. The next morning, he had more media interviews, and we headed into town to Auckland City the next day to file more documents in the Auckland court. Throughout that day, Graham was carrying out media interviews via his cell phone, and he said to me, right, that's the Paul Henry show, we're on tonight. And I heard the discussion that Graham had, and he said that John Key has been carrying on like Stalin, this needs to be exposed, and as soon as this gets out in the mainstream media, Key will basically have to step down straight away. Paul Henry invited him in for an interview that night. And I had seen the documents, and of course the prime document that I'm referring to in relation to the Pinchgate affair is my own affidavit, which is supported by bail conditions, search warrants, and a transcript from North Shore District Courts, which confirm it. Now, that bundle of papers was put to Henry, and I know that. Graham and I were having a conversation on the phone while he was sitting in the studio at about 8:30, 8:45. Henry was in receipt of all the documents. When you see the affidavit and the supporting evidence from myself, the accusations in there are very serious. There's no way you bluff over those and particularly when they were the subject of why you invited the man in. There's just no way you bluff over those, hold them up and say, here's a bundle of documents and throw it away, which is what Henry did 6 minutes into the interview while McCready wasn't sitting there present listening to that part of it. So the discreditation was already done. And I feel what he saw was just too damaging and they couldn't go there. The details are in, that are in the document is a sworn statement from myself that the arrest was ordered by John Key. The sergeant had confirmed it came from John Key. It was a gag order bail conditions at election time. And then it gave a summary of what's gone on since then, the homes being seized, the armed raids, the closing of a business, etc., when there's actually no charge there in the first place. And then the law being totally ignored, I could pay my mortgages off. And the ASB bank blocked all those procedures and sold the properties at half price. Nothing in the legal system would work for me. And that needs to come out. That needs to be examined. And either I'm a complete nutter and these things didn't occur, or I'm on the nail and New Zealand's got a huge problem. And I certainly know which one's going on. The evidence is there and the challenges for these so-called reputable watchdogs of New Zealand society, like the Paul Henry Show, to actually do their job, stop telling the public lies, stop the propaganda, and actually get these messages out there so society's got a chance to function.
This is a very personal issue for me. I've been invited to the New Zealand Journalists Association Facebook page and New Zealand Radio, New Zealand Television, and every single time I post any one of my videos or any one of my radio shows about any topic, you get these vitriolic, angry, name-calling BS and calls for the things to be censored and taken down. And these are all our New Zealand media. These are the people who are hosting your radio shows. These are the people who are hosting your TV shows. These are the people who are writing your articles who don't want to hear anything even close to resembling the truth without an enormous censorship, hush, hush, oh my God, you can't say that unless you've got blah, blah, blah sources, and even then if it's too damaging, they might sue you or defame you or something like that. These people are used to walking on eggshells and lying to themselves about what the truth is for a living, and they get paid handsomely.
How can they challenge a sergeant prosecutor standing up in the North Shore Court and confirming the matter has come from the highest level of government? How do you challenge that? Why do the media not immediately see this is an issue we must get out before the New Zealand public? This is exactly what we have a media for. Well, we all know it failed. We've only got to look. I looked at the Campbell Show. People keep on saying to me, how come the Campbell Show hasn't done something on your case? And I looked at the Campbell Show, and the first thing that pops up is the ASB Bank. Well, how are they going to bite the hand that feeds them? The media is controlled. It doesn't work. We see MH17 shot down, was it Thursday last week, Friday last week? And within about 2 hours of it being shot down over Russia, our media is already saying Russia's done it. Well, no one even knew a missile was involved to begin with. And our media is so quick to jump in there and say, Russia done it, look at Putin. Well, what's it got to do with Putin at this stage? We're 4 or 5 days later, nothing's been established whatsoever. So, you know, the media are not just not telling us the facts, they're prepared to go right out there and lie to us again and again and again. That's a serious problem.
The corruption in this country runs deep, and the only way that real corruption, and I'm talking about like state capture, you know, when you've like basically you've got the policy level all corrupted and captured by the corporations and things of that nature. Apparently in the United States it's pretty straightforward. It only costs about $30 million to bribe almost every influential congressman in the whole house. So how cheap could it be to New Zealand? I heard allegedly, what's his name, Roger Douglas took only $25,000 to sign us out to the neoliberal economic reforms, which disabled the entire economy, you know. So New Zealanders are kind of like a tall poppy people, and we sell ourselves cheap. And big corrupt scumbaggery individuals from overseas banking cartels and things of that nature that control a lot of the purse strings for the entirety of the world's military industrial complex, which hence winds up being the majority of the people who contribute to campaign funding and things of that nature. they kind of got it stitched up, bro. And this is the reason why it's such an emotional issue for me, is because people, it's not that they can't see it. It's not that they won't see it. It's just not being seen for some reason. And the brainwashing, the mind control of very, very simple orders like repetition. It's easy to make people think things if you repeat it to them over and over again. So when they see Graham McCready and they see the word serial litigant filed again and again for somebody who's done like, what was it doing, like 40, 50 something legal advocacy for people who are being shafted in this way, that way and the other.
Well, it shows a demand for it.
Yeah, it just means that the legal system is basically too costly for people with good causes and money that's been taken away from them by the robber barons who run this frickin' country to really go into the court system and absorb the cost. So at the end of the day, most legal work is just about time. And instead of charging somebody $750 an hour, you could just volunteer that in order to do some good for the country, as Mr. McCready, Penny Bright, and yourself have done. And then media douchebags, like, no offense to Paul Henry, but it's one of an archetype of people who are all over the media, who are strongly opinionated, very talented and good at presenting what they do. But at the end of the day, as you said, Russell, they cannot bite the hand that feeds them. And they won't quit their job like people like Ian Wishart have done in order to start their own businesses and broadcasting avenues by which they can get the truth out and get their own advertisers and have clean money through their coffers rather than dirty money, dirty words, and dirty lies.
What you're saying is right on the money. There has to be a better system for it. You know, you come back to what you said about Roger Douglas, and you say, oh, he took 25 grand. I don't know if he took 25 grand or not. I was around in those days. We saw what was happening, and I put it down to a social experiment that New Zealand is normally at the forefront of. Certainly didn't see it coming. It was all part of Agenda 21. And, you know, 3 decades later now, and we're starting to really wake up. It's well implemented. It's got us trapped, and they've pretty much taken over ownership of everything, and they've got people feeling totally oppressed. Everyone's now asking what they're allowed to do instead of actually getting on with their lives. Do we actually have a pool of people in Parliament who've actually got a brain? That's the question. That's really the question. Is there any leadership material in there? Is there anyone in Parliament who actually got there on their own merits of self-sacrifice for the greater good? Surely that has to be the preemptive condition. What did they do in the form of self-sacrifice for the greater good to be worthy of being considered a leader? And even these ones who are voted by their constituency, as soon as they're in power, they have to dump their constituency because they have to toe a party line. You look at the national lineup, they're not even allowed to comment. It comes down to the head man and his scriptwriters, and we know it's only scriptwriters, who put it out there, whatever they're going to try and blaze over the public with. There's not a speech in there. There's not a word in there that comes from the heart. It comes from scriptwriters. How the hell do the public actually allow those people to rule over us? That's absolute laziness at the least. It's a genocide on the society we're in for allowing it to continue. And if anyone thinks it's not, just look what's going on around the world, and that's what we're seeing everywhere. So we actually have no choice. What do? Roll over and die, or do we stand up? We've got the elections here now. Who is actually standing, who's actually made self-sacrifice to get into a position of leadership? You identify one person, and if that person does exist, you can bet your boots the mainstream media won't be giving them any fair coverage or fair reporting.
The only two people I can see of that nature in terms of self-sacrifice, and self-sacrifice is two-toned, meaning there's things that you get willingly give up for the greater good, and there are things that are taken from you that you don't make a big fuss about for the greater good. Like, for example, Winston Peters, he promised the people of Tauranga that he'd build that second bridge without a single dollar increase on their rates, and he did. And then when he got voted out, they then opened the bridge, and he wasn't even invited to the opening ceremony. And then Hone Harawira, when the Māori Party was giving support to climate change and carbon tax legislation, he blanketedly refused. The media never kind of covered that part of his resistance to Māori Party politics. And, of course, their alliance of evil with the National Party, and they kicked him out of that. So we're talking about people who have basically been shafted and had their political career sabotaged and are often among the first people upon re-election to get kicked out of Parliament House during debating chambers, in Winston's case, because of calling Jerry Brownlee an illiterate woodshop teacher. Which is probably the most amusing thing that has happened in Parliament. And if anything, people like that deserve a vote at the very least because they're not afraid to speak their mind and they certainly make the whole doldrum of the process a lot more fun. Not to mention, let me stop, get off my bandwagon here because we're talking about John Key, aren't we? I think the importance of this discussion in the case of Graham McCready, who in my opinion has set a precedent for private prosecution and taking down John Banks, who was a senior political aficionado of the country, you know, former commissioner of police, and now incidentally the police didn't want to do an investigation into him for this thing, which now they're going to investigate into themselves using the quote-unquote Independent Police Conduct Authority, which is staffed exclusively by who? The New Zealand Police? Do people not know English? The word independent, it doesn't mean what you think it means.
Well, there's four judges looked at the evidence that the police said wasn't enough to proceed on, and all four judges said, yes, there is, there's plenty here. That's all that needs to be said.
Corruption!
And John Key is out there making statements that John Banks will never be prosecuted and he'll never be found guilty. But this is the same John Key who says, I'm not going to read the police report, which, of course, to have a police report put in front of him on the corruption of a minister who's not actually his, who he's totally reliant upon, and to say, I'm not going to look, he's basically saying, I'm not looking in case there's something there I don't see. But I'm sure enough myself to know he's not committed an offence and he won't be convicted for it. Well, how can you actually wear both those hats? How can willfully blind to corruption? And I'll put it to you that the reason he's willfully blind to that corruption is that all the snouts out there are in the trough, not just John Banks. They're all in there. Just John Banks got caught out. Kim.com thought he had him paid up and he'd be fine. And unfortunately, he'd paid up someone, but he had a deal going on that came from way above Banks' head and way above Key's head. It came from the States, and nobody could challenge that. And Kim.com is, okay, well, I'm not shutting up. He's got a lot of fight in him. And they couldn't keep him inside where they thought they'd keep him. They couldn't keep him broken. They'd done the media reports. You may recall on the day he was raided, there was a huge media report to say how they'd got this international pirate and they had him locked up and how dangerous, etc. he must have been, all by innuendo. Since when can the police go ahead and do a summary like that in a media interview before the man's even been in court?
Yeah, I mean, that makes them lower than Judas, which would make it sub-Judas, hey?
Well, Judas done the right thing and went and killed himself. He cleaned the world up.
How interesting. I wonder also, who's the prime beneficiary of this internet mana / cannabis party legislation law reform? It seems to be the central figure of all of this isn't actually Kim.com or Hone Harawira or the leader of Normal or anything. It seems to be Martin Bradbury. And what it seems to me, this election is about hardcore socialism versus hardcore corporatism, right? You've got the socialist blocs on the left who all have Agenda 21 as their environment policy. Labour, Greens actually stated openly that their environment policy is Agenda 21. Also had some listeners inquire officially to the Internet Party to see whether or not they support Agenda 21, and it is their environment policy. And if you look at the wording in the Labour and National Party environmental policies, they are word for word almost identical to to each other's policy and are almost word for word identical to pages out of Agenda 21. So what you're talking about is a right-wing block, which is comprising about 52-53% of the vote being National, and a left-wing part of the block. I don't include New Zealand First in this, or United Future, apparently, and or ACT, because they're apparently anti-Agenda 21. But the remaining there is about maybe 40% or so. So you've got maybe about 10% of the political representation in this country who don't want to be slaves, and who get constantly demonised in the media and get bugger all coverage.
First thing, that's exactly right. If you're not pro Agenda 21, you're not part of who's going to get coverage in the first place. But how many have actually woken up to what's really going on? How many see it? How many honestly have seen what is going on? Like even a simple thing like the banking system and how that operates. It's obvious to anyone who looks into it. It takes a bit of waking up to it, such a shock to the system. But you cannot have a system or a culture or a society which can have a banking system such as what we've got. You cannot introduce a currency in as a debt and not have the issuer of that debt end up taking everything off all the players in the game. If we set up a monopoly game where the banker issues the currency at the beginning of the game and has to be paid interest every time someone goes around, and plus you have to repay what you've the currency you're issued in the first place, people would very quickly see that there's no way of surviving it. The only thing that's perhaps people have got as an excuse for not seeing it is that it's hidden in corporate ownership, and the laws that have been brought in the past 30 years, particularly the compliancing, put the small businesses out, hand it all over to the big businesses. The talk of keeping businesses going and encouraging people to get into business is only part of the cycle of getting people into debt, getting their homes mortgages, and then collapsing their businesses with an ink dot on a piece of paper somewhere through some legislation, and then taking everything off them, saying, well, they gave it a shot, but the recession came along. So essentially all they're doing is taking what Liz Lambert refers to as the sweat equity, the people's actual earnings. They put that up as a deposit on things. The value of what they put it on is then knocked back when the recession kicks in. They lose their sweat equity. The banks who put up nothing end up taking everything. And it goes off, it goes hidden into corporate names. People jumped up and down about asset sales, but there was other things that went on that they didn't see, which was the stealing of assets such as Solid Energy. The CEO of Solid Energy was instructed to get the company into a lot of debt. He got it into a lot of debt. The company is then folds, but oh, the package, the rescue package, is that the shares then go to the banks. So that was just a straight out asset stripping without it ever going through any formal process of selling it. The equity shareholders, the sweat shareholders, lost their percentage. The same thing goes for MediaWorks. The, was it $37 million advanced to MediaWorks before the last election? Then they fold. Oh, who gets those shares? Oh, it went to the bankers. So the bankers end up owning it. So it's asset
incidentally,
shifting without the asset sale process.
Incidentally, the former CEO of MediaWorks, it was incidentally the communications minister who brokered that $37 million deal, Mr. Stephen Joyce, who incidentally was probably one of the people who got it into that debt in the first freaking place. They got elected and bailed it out, and then I allege, leveraged them into giving John Key the Prime Minister's hour, which was totally, like, legit, you know, with one eye cocked to one side. You know, he's the Prime Minister of New Zealand. He has the Prime Minister hour under the guise of he can't talk about politics, therefore it's not a political show in the middle of election, which is illegal. Is anybody freaking home? You've got to be freaking kidding me. This is disgusting. This country is so blatantly corrupt. I mean, honestly, I think I'm becoming a little bit mad, because when I see the politicians in this country and our judges, a lot of the police people who go on the interviews, I can almost see them in those sort of things that Idi Amin and those other African dictators used to wear, you know, like the garbs and the hats and all the medals and fake stuff that they've got all over them, you know, like they're these brutal, disgusting dictators who are really, really charming and just, you know, smile at you as they torture and kill and destroy everything that your country was ever built upon.
Well, the same's happened here. We may not see the guns coming out the way that Idi Amin might have shot out and done it. He might not be someone on your doorstep with a machete killing you that way, but you still kill people with stress and trauma. That's the biggest killer of the whole damn lot.
A cause of 90% of all illness, stress is.
Deliberately inflicted. Absolutely deliberately inflicted.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, so I'll have you one last statement, and then we've got to go, Russell.
Yep. I believe that what the media should do is front up and state what the allegations are against Key, allow that to be thoroughly scrutinised, and either what I'm saying is correct or it's not. But the allegation's been made. The evidence is there, so I'm either telling the truth or I'm not. But you've seen a lot of that evidence, Vinny.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And if you want to see more of the evidence, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mr News Guerrilla Media, and you search Russell Malcolm. They always say don't trust a man with two first names, but, you know, in this case, I'll make an exception. Thank you very much, Russell.
It's a Scottish name. It's got to be right.
If you say so. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Vinny.